Hello, everyone. Thank you again for joining Dorsey Ross on this episode of The Dorsey Ross Show. In this episode, Dorsey interviews another special guest that will give you hope and inspire you.
Hey, guys, I just wanted to put an ad in this episode. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. One, it's free. There's a creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. And I've tried it, and it's really easy to do. It's not as complicated or as difficult as you would think it would be. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcast, and many more. Download the free Anchor app or go to your anchor.fm to get started. Hey guys, thank you again for coming to another episode of the Dorsey Ross Podcast. Today we have a special guest on my show. He is a longtime friend of mine. He and I met at what is now the University of Valley Forge. He is a licensed professional counselor, and he speaks worldwide, and he speaks about individuals, families, schools, and businesses, small and large, and he can rewrite their story and literally change the world with lasting results. And we're going to welcome right now Josh Neuer to the show. Josh, thank you so much for coming on this episode and telling us about what you do and telling us about your story.
Hey, Dorsey. Thanks so much for having me on the show, man.
Yeah, no problem.
I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Definitely. So, Josh, tell us about your story and about what you have experienced in your life.
Chapter 1, 2, 3, 4. That's a big story. I love what I'm able to do as a licensed professional counselor, and I'm able to take a lot of my story, and it's been amazing to see. I meet with families, so individuals, couples, families, teenagers, all the way up to couples in their later stages of life, and to be able to see how every single part of my story has been redeemed through conversations to help others, it's kind of mind-blowing, honestly. And it's neat because I didn't think I'd be able to get to this place. So it's really cool to kind of see how God is using. Nothing's wasted with God. So even the aspects of my story that I don't love, I certainly wouldn't want to relive again. They've been able to help others.
Yeah, definitely. What are some of those aspects that you're able to, tell and be able to help people with?
Yeah.
Those aspects of your life.
Well, when I was growing up, my mom and dad were divorced very young before I can really remember it. So I don't really have memories of them together. So I meet with a good number of clients for divorce. And it's interesting talking to them on the front end. And here I am all these years later. So whether it's couples I'm working with who are trying to work on their marriage, or it's, children of divorced families, that's something I'm pretty passionate about, is helping them through that. A lot of people don't see divorce as grief, and it certainly is grief and loss. So we work on that. I lost my mom in college when we were together. And then a few years later after that, I lost my dad. So grief and loss has been a big part of it, adjustments in life. I like working with families because I've been working with families for almost 20 years now. And, seeing hope in families, and when families are strong, communities are strong. So it's really awesome to partner with families in the counseling work that I do.
Yeah, that's awesome. That sounds like a very good field to be in. Now, you and I met at the University of Valley Forge, and, like you said, we both, at that time, we both dealt with, the loss of our moms and everything. Now, when you were there, did you study psychology at Valley Forge?
Dorsey, me and you are old men. We've known each other for 20 years now, my friend.
Yeah, I know.
Before I answer that question, I just want to say I'm really proud of you, man. I see what you're doing and the way you're helping inspire so many people. Read your book. Really appreciate you sharing your story. And so it's cool to be with you today.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. So I studied psychology. So at the University of Valley Forge, there were psychology classes. There was the grief classes and groups I was in. My major was pastoral ministry, so it was a lot of theology classes as well, which has helped shape a lot of the work that I do. It's a good level of integration of both theology and psychology. But the classes there were super engaging, and that's a large part of the reason. Like a lot of life made sense when I was in those classes, and I think that's what drew me to wanting to learn more about it. And then I went from there to my master's in professional counseling, and that's where I really did a lot of my own personal work, too.
Gotcha. How should people, I'm not sure if I'm asking this question the right way, but how should people help family and friends that have some type of psychological issues, would it be possibly autism or some type of mental issue that a family member or a friend is dealing with? Because I think sometimes, when we hear the word mental issue, we sometimes, run away from those people, and we're afraid to interact with those people, somebody that has a bipolar issue or some other type of issue, because we don't know how to interact with them.
Right.
So how do we handle those types of people?
Yeah, thanks for asking that. I mean, a lot of these are people that we work with. There are people in our family. Sometimes they're mothers, fathers, and children. And the number one thing I would say is to talk about it. I feel like we as a culture have become very much like an eggshell type of community where we're afraid to speak our mind, especially like with bigger issues and bigger personalities. When we're able to share our thoughts and feelings, we're able to, connect with people. And a lot of times I think we don't want to see things. We don't want things to be hard, so we don't engage in those conversations.
Right.
And sometimes the person that's having the issue doesn't want to talk about it. And I think that kind of imprisons one and keeps the person from receiving help, but also keeps them stuck where they are. So it's kind of two parts, There's kind of the two sides of the same coin. One part might be people who are afraid to engage them, and the other part might be that they're not willing to receive the help that's available to them in their community.
Right.
That's where I think it kind of slides into advocacy, and the really we all kind of need to get to a place where we're willing to admit we need help to some extent. And once we're able to get there, we can find out kind of where we are, at least get some level of baseline, like, what do I need? Some people are just so stressed or so anxious or so worked up. They're so busy. They're so tired. And then sometimes, like you said, there's more severe mental illness that's happening. And sometimes there needs to be some level of like evaluation. They need to find out what's happening. And sometimes, physiologically in their body, biologically, they need to figure out what's happening inside the body. And the mind and the body are so well connected. Sometimes having a third party, like a counselor or somebody that's not family, it can really help. I can work with clients that they don't have to worry about hurting my feelings. They're not going to see me for dinner or Christmas, and that's kind of nice,
Right. Have you ever thought about writing a book, and what would that book be about?
Yeah, I've thought about writing a book. I was super inspired when I read yours, man. So I write articles a lot on my website at joshnewer.com. There's a lot of, all the articles are free. There's no cost. And there's so many topics, about grief, loss, burnout, divorce, so many things on the parenting. There's so many different things, marriage. And the idea of a book sounds really good. I'm super interested in it, but staying on one topic is sometimes hard for me. I can write an article, but to think of writing an entire book about one specific thing is hard for me. I've written a book about my life story, but I've shared it with my wife and just a few friends. I'd send it to you, Dorsey, but it's not out. It's not on Barnes & Noble's shelf or anything. It's pretty personal. But I wanted to get it out there, and it was actually really therapeutic to write it. Did you feel like when you wrote your book, it was pretty therapeutic? Did it feel good to kind of get that out there?
It definitely did, especially when, you know, people come up to me or email me and say, "Hey, Dorsey, you know, your story is so inspirational and encouragement to me. I greatly appreciate, you know, you writing it and you spending the time to you know, to write it out."
Yeah, that's awesome. Thanks for sharing that. Dorsey Ross, Overcomer, available now at Amazon.com. How's that?
Sounds good. Thank you for the plug.
You bet.
I know that you like to public speak. What is it that you speak and teach on? And do you go, where do you go? And do you go into churches to speak on the topic of divorce or the topic of mental illness?
Yeah, I was actually really shy growing up. And I always felt like I had thoughts and things that were worth sharing. And, you know, it really wasn't until I was a teacher for 11 years before I went into counseling. And in those 11 years, I would be up in front of the kids constantly. And then I used to do a family night where once a month I'd bring all the parents and families in. And I really liked the idea of being a sort of a gatherer. Like, you'd get all these people in a room together. And I was like, all right, let's maximize the time we have. Let's make it worth everybody's time in this room. And so I prepared a ton, and I just sort of shared a lot of what I was seeing. I mean, you know, I've had almost 20 years of experience in working in schools, you know, now as a licensed professional counselor, seeing all of what I'm seeing, research, and then just sharing the day-to-day of what I'm seeing in our culture with parents. And, you know, some of that is a lot of just grace-based parenting. So it's not beating themselves up, moving out of perfectionism. But I've talked on everything from mental health in the workplace, creating personal self-care plans. We've talked about nonverbal communication and body language, grief and loss, conflict resolution. We talked about divorce. That's something we've done before. And yeah, mental wellness in school and social emotional learning and all that good stuff. And a lot of times it's the first time that somebody's really been able to engage in that in the workplace, even in the church setting, partly because of the stigma and partly because people just don't think it's of value until they realize, holy smokes, like, this is exactly the very thing that people are dealing with.
Right.
And so usually after sessions like that, people will come up to me and talk to me and say, thank you so much. I mean, this is something I wish we were talking about more. And so I'm hopeful that, you know, in the workplace, in the church, and families are able to receive that sort of help. So yeah, I love it. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of work because I prepare a lot. I know I don't travel nearly as much as you do. I'm blown away with what you've been able to do with the ministry, man. It's so cool to see you're making your connection in so many places and just being able to share your story and inspire others. That's a big part of what motivates me to get back out there and just be with the people in that moment and make that connection. And then share anything I can that's been helpful.
Right. What are some of the signs of depression and even anxiety? And how could people deal with those two things? And are those two things interconnected?
Yeah, that's good. Well, let me say this to start. I'd say that if there's been a significant loss that's recently happened, that's to be grieved before any talk of depression, I would say, to encourage the listener first to grieve. You know, so if there was a divorce or there was a loss of a family member, a loss of a pet, loss of a house, I mean, there's so many ways to experience loss. Hey, retirement, empty nesting, I mean, whatever it is, any way that you are dealing with that loss, it first needs to be grieved. You know, some evaluations would say after 2 weeks, you're considered depressed of grieving a significant loss. I kind of have a problem with that. I think that it takes more than 2 weeks to move past losing a family member. So I would say that to start. Now, over time, if that persistent feeling of sadness continues, that's something to pay attention to. Sometimes there's changes in mood, appetite, sleep, and other factors. It might look different, you know, for one person, there's a lot of crying, and for another person, there's no tears, but they feel numb. Sometimes there's weight gain. Sometimes there's weight loss. And, you know, everybody sort of grieves differently. And then what it looks like for someone who's depressed can look a little different than some other people. It's really important to pay attention to, you know, their body and to know and respect their limitations. Sometimes having people to talk things through can really help in the process to help them organize their thoughts and like help them heal. The biggest thing is community, like we talked about earlier, and, you know, not having those eggshells. I met with somebody earlier today. They came in and they said, I'm really worried about my husband, you know, and then they told me all the signs. And I said, okay, those are pretty important to pay attention to. And she's getting to the point where she's like, I just need to get him help, you know, which is a very different stage where she was sort of like just staying stuck, worried, or just hoping he'll do something. Whereas now she's like, that's it. I'm going to get him help. I'm going to advocate for him on behalf of him, because right now he is unable to help himself. And that's the value of family and friends. That's what we need to do for one another sometimes.
Is there any way for us as friends and family members to help those with depression or help those with anxiety before they have to go and see, you know, a professional counselor? Or how do we say to someone, hey, you've been depressed or you have anxiety attacks too often, you need to go see a professional counselor?
Yeah. Well, it, you know, if you have that place with them, you know, I mean, if you have that rapport and you can have conversations like that, I think that's important. And again, it goes back to the kind of the eggshell mentality. Like, we've got to stop walking on eggshells. We've just got to stop doing that. Now, you can be a listener. You know, I like talking about Job, you know, Job's friends and how they kind of royally screwed up because all they did was want to fix the situation, blame shift, all that stuff, as opposed to, you know, being there and actively listening, engaging the person and asking them questions and just being a support, empathizing with them, not just feeling bad for them. And sometimes out of that creates the partnership that now they're willing to receive additional help and support. The biggest thing is isolation. You know, once a person isolates, they're prone to so many worse things like substance abuse, drugs and alcohol, hurting themselves. You know, sometimes self-harm becomes a factor in isolation, and really, I think, slowly slipping away. You know, solitude is a beautiful thing. Solitude is not isolation. Isolation is you are withdrawing and choosing to pull yourself away from people. And sometimes there's a very comforting feeling in that. If you've ever been in that state, you know what it's like. Like, I don't want to move. I'm not motivated. It feels good to be here. I like to think of it as like I love the movie, The Count of Monte Cristo, and he talks about, and when they go down the tower with the guy with the, he's holding like the torch and he's leading him down there, and it just gets darker and darker and more scary. And that's kind of what it is we allow ourselves to go so far down these places, and it's so much harder to get out of them. And oftentimes it takes someone else, you know, like in the movie, it takes someone else dying for him to get his chance to get out. I don't want to say it takes death, but I would say it takes sacrifice to help somebody. So I would say starting with having the conversation, asking them if they think it's a problem. Sometimes you can just ask like, hey, I see that you've been, you know, and you can tell them what they've been doing. You've been sleeping a lot, or you haven't been sleeping at all. You know, you've been really not yourself, you know, and usually sometimes you need to make people aware because it's such a progressively slow process sometimes for people. And other times they're just not ready for that change. And so it takes time to really walk them through that. And it's messy. You know, there's no three-step process per se. It's messy. You know, think about when me and you were in college and when we lost our mom. I mean, people can try to say all the right things and do all the right things. And that's not what it's about. It's just about, you know, being with somebody who's willing to listen.
Right.
And just taking it one day at a time with them. I think that's huge. And then as that escalates and as your needs increase, then you can talk about seeing a medical doctor, seeing a professional counselor, and taking that next step.
Yeah, definitely. I know it helped, you know, me when I was at Valley Forge to speak with Darren Heilman, who at the time, you know, when he was younger, he lost his mom, you know, and I asked him, like, hey, you know, how do you deal with it, and what encouragement can you give to me?
That's right.
And he said to me, you know, just to pray about it. You know, when you pray to God, to say, you know, to God, you know, hey, God, tell mom I'm missing her today, or, you know, tell mom I said hello, you know, those types of things. Now, we don't know spiritually if God actually went and told her these things until we get to heaven.
Right.
But that definitely, you know, it definitely helped, you know, to ease that pain and ease that loss that I was dealing with at that time.
Mm. Yeah.
And I think, like you're saying, you know, we just need to have friends or family members that can relate to what we're dealing with instead of, you know, like Job did. He just went and told all the friends and he got, you know, different answers from different people. And that definitely didn't help.
Right. Yeah, I had a similar situation with when I lost my mom, and I went to the grief share program. So there's grief share support groups throughout the country. And when we were up at Valley Forge, I went to one, and it was just so good to be in company with those that had experienced that loss before. It was just an understanding. We didn't even have to use words, and I stayed with that. And then when I moved to Florida, I also went then to another grief share, and that was huge, man. That's like my number one place I like to refer people to when they've experienced a loss. In addition to counseling, to be in a group around others who understand and empathize. I'm glad you were able to talk to him and have that same connection. That's important to find somebody who understands.
Yeah, definitely. As we can see in this world, you know, there seems to be a lot of sadness and even a lack of joy. What do you think that is, and where do you think we can find that happiness and that joy to return into our lives and even into this world again?
Yeah, that's a great question right there, Doris. Well, you know, we're surrounded by news media and often brokenness. It's pretty unparalleled. Like it's information overload at this point. There's a book called Margin where the author Richard Swenson says that he says a single edition of the New York Times contains more information than a 17th century Britisher would encounter in a lifetime. If I read 2 health articles every day next year, I would be 8 centuries behind in my reading. We are buried by data on a daily basis. I mean, that's just crazy. We're just constantly bombarded with images and just overly sexualized culture. It's just too much, man, too much. There's an article I wrote on my website called The Rise in Anxiety and Depression, and it talks about, among, you know, other things, I listed a few key pieces that have shifted in our culture that talk about, like, the changes in the family system, our time and margin. Like, we've just become so overly in a state of hurry and constant anticipation that people are unsettled and they're anxious. And what does the idea of slowing down look like? You know, like, when God rested on the seventh day, that was the Sabbath. I mean, it's the opening to the Bible. I mean, literally, that was the origin of self-care. And if you talk to somebody about Sabbath now, they look at you like you have 10 heads. Like, well, what's wrong with you, man? I got to be busy. I got to be productive. And the same people I see there,
right,
you know, the people I know that are mostly type A, efficient, get things done, they're the people that are most prone to having panic attacks. You know, it doesn't prey on the weak. And so I just think that we've put ourselves into high gear, I guess you'd say. You know, and there's always like the factor, some of it could be genetics, and then it's always the combination of genetics and also environment around us. But I would say, as far as hope goes, I'm extremely hopeful. I believe there's always hope. We've talked about this when we lost our moms, and when that grief came in, it was utter sadness and devastation. And without the hope of God in my life, I just know I wouldn't be here. This conversation wouldn't even be happening, honestly. And so, you know, just so much credit to understanding not only what God is doing in our life now and that personal relationship, knowing that in prayer, we're constantly with him. We're never alone. And then this idea, I've been reading, I just finished it, actually, a book by John Eldridge called All Things New. And it was pretty encouraging. He talks a lot, not just about heaven, but the idea of this new earth and the idea of everything being restored. I mean, everything being restored, and how it's going to look a lot like Eden, and it's going to be beautiful. And we don't even know what 1 minute, let alone eternity, looks like without sin without brokenness, without pain, without tears of sorrow, without death. Like, what in the world does that look like? I talked to a client this week and I was like, what are the, you know, we talked about a lot of different things, but then we talked about this idea of things being restored and the hope we can have about that now.
Right.
I was like, what are like some of the things you're looking forward to? And he was like, I want to go skiing. And I told him that. I was like, I don't understand how we go skiing, but we don't die. And then eating, like, I want to eat. I talked to one woman, not a client, and she has to watch her alcohol intake. That has become a problem for her. And she said one thing she really wants to do when she's, you know, she goes to heaven and the new earth, is she's like, I want to drink as much as I want with no consequence. And I said, that is awesome. Like, I think that this is a lot of the way that God has built us. I think that, and it's kind of wild to think that we're going to do the similar things that we're doing now. Like, I don't know if I'm going to be doing counseling there, if I'm, you know, I play the drums, if I'm going to be playing drums there, but I don't think we just hit the reset button. You know, I think that everything is enhanced. It's restored.
Right.
So it's pretty hopeful. What would you say you're looking forward to, Doris, when you pass on to the next realm, the better world? What are you looking forward to?
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to, you know, seeing my mom again and seeing my family again and just, you know, meeting everybody. Obviously, you know, first of all, seeing Jesus and hopefully hearing those great words, you know, well done, good and faithful servant.
Yeah.
And, you know, just seeing what heaven's going to be like and seeing what the new heavens and the new earth is going to be like and all that, all that interesting things that we sometimes can't wrap our heads around.
That's right. Yeah, that's super encouraging. There's another quote, John Eldridge, he said this. Last year, Stacy met a woman from India who works as a missionary there among Indian women trafficked in prostitution. She explained to us that because of family honor, these women cannot return home even if they wanted to. They are now now a disgrace to their family. And he said many women around the world are killed by their own families once their sexuality has been compromised, you know, in parentheses, even under coercion. They have nowhere to go. These dear, beautiful women and girls have no place to turn but Jesus. And so his wife says, well, what do you do? You know, what can you offer them? And then the woman said, we gather and talk about the coming kingdom. She said, we talk and we worship. Their worship of Jesus is very joyful. Then they go back to their owners. Even as I report this to you, it is taking place right now. These daughters of God are living under evil every day. They have no hope, but they come into the kingdom, and yet they worship? ? Their worship is joyful? ? What do they know about hope that we who live in comfort are totally ignorant of? How much closer is their faith to the New Testament than mine is? I want to know. I read that, man. I stayed on that page for like 2.5 days. I just couldn't go past it. You know, and he talks about, listen, this is a big time of tolerance. Like, we don't want to offend people. We don't want to say the wrong thing. We don't want to feel like we're going to get tested under fire about our faith. And he's like, what are we doing? Like, this is a hopeless time. Why aren't we sharing this good news with others? You know, that's what I love about the work you do, man. You go into these places and you're able to share your heart. And I believe, you know, what God's led on your heart. And that's something I try to do in my sessions. You know, I can't push my faith. That's not ethical. But if they ask me, they say, well, what do you think about this? Or what would you do in this situation? Or, you know, they engage me. I'm able to share that hope with them. If they're open to praying, we're able to pray at times and bring all these things under God's control. And, you know, it feels so good not to have to hold all those things together and believe, like, he does all that supernatural stuff for us and with us. So encouraging. That's what I would say, the big question, you know, what hope we have. I think there's so much hope, you know, and I do see, I think people are advocating more for their needs. I see the stigma of mental health becoming less, and I'm encouraged by that. You know, if somebody goes to a counselor, a lot of times they're like, hey, good job, that's awesome. But, you know, I'm going to the dentist tomorrow. Nobody's going to say, hey, good job, Josh. I'm really proud of you for going to the dentist. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
That's when I know we're really making progress, and people are like, oh, that's great. I see my counselor too. You know, I love telling my clients, you know, from time to time, I'll go see a counselor, you know, and if a doctor's not seeing another doctor, there's probably a problem there.
Right. This is more of a two-part question. For those that feel down or feel like life is not worth living, what would you say to those to encourage them?
I was saying that I think it's important for them to kind of be honest about where they are and for them to share, you know, exactly the way that they're feeling, name it. If they're feeling abandoned or rejected, to state plainly how they feel. Don't minimize it and not isolate themselves. Isolation is the biggest problem. Even Billy Graham said that loneliness was the chronic loneliness is the biggest problem in all the world, is what he had said before he'd passed away. And so this idea of isolation, loneliness, I think it's killing us. And as we connect in so many ways digitally, we're still so lonely. So I would say, like, you know, tell a friend. There is a crisis text line. I'm just going to give you a bunch of resources since we have them available. If you do go to my website, joshnewer.com, on there, there are a host of international and regional resources for any type of people who are having thoughts of taking their life, of suicide, or just loneliness. I hear that about once a week, the idea of being lonely, the idea of feeling like you don't have close friends and you're not intimate with people around you. And that's, without intimacy, we die. I mean, there's no way around it. We're built for touch. We're built for connection. We're built for community. And when that's not happening, the devastation starts. The shame sets in. And sometimes people are just mean. They say awful, hurtful things. And if we're not mindful, we're likely to believe that. Approval is such a big part of it. So the idea of telling a friend, talking to a professional, going somewhere that's safe, you know, and when I say, like, if you're in like a 10 out of 10, like, all right, you know, this isn't like light stuff. If you feel like you have the means, you're thinking about taking your life and you feel like you have a plan, you know, when or how you're going to do this, it's time to, if you feel like you yourself are in danger or you're with someone and you feel like they're in danger, that's when it's time to call 911 or go to the ER. Right. I mean, if it's going to save your life or their life, that's what you do.
Yeah.
And if you've never called 911 before, it's not nearly as scary as they make it on the TV shows. They're going to ask you questions. It's a lot like our podcast today, Dorsey. They're going to ask you questions and you're going to answer it.
Right.
Except you're going to just talk about what's happening right now in the moment.
Yeah.
So you got to talk. You got to talk about it. You know, I'm most concerned about people in isolation. And they're alone and they don't know what to do. And they have those negative thoughts in their mind. And then sometimes those thoughts are telling them things to do. And it's important to get help around them and to be surrounded by people that love them, care for them, and to make sure that they're aware that they're not alone. Because right. I believe that they're not alone and there is always hope.
That's good stuff.
Man, everything's treatable. I mean, a lot of people just think it's a life sentence. And I'm not saying it's not going to be difficult. I'm not going to minimize it. But, you know, the crisis text line talks about how suicide is a leading cause of death. You know, in my state, it's the second leading cause of death for kids 15 years old to, you know, and to people in their 30s. I mean, it's prevalent, but it's also so preventable. So, like, the crisis text line has talked about how they've had the ability to save nearly 45,000 lives. And that's, so they say globally, that number's closer to 800,000. So you got the U.S. number than the global number.
Right.
This is where I'm really encouraged and hopeful. Like, there's so much more help now than there ever has been. And that's encouraging.
Definitely. Well, Josh, I thank you for being on the show today. You know, greatly appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, you're welcome, Doris. Thanks for what you're doing, man, and making the connection and allowing me to share the work that I'm doing. People can reach me if they want to reach me through my website at joshnewer.com, or they can email me directly at josh@joshnewer.com. And I'd love to connect with them.
Yeah, thank you for what you're doing as well and for helping, you know, people and encouraging people and, you know, walking them through, you know, their life difficulties and life situations that they're going through as well.
Absolutely. I love what I'm able to do. I'm very thankful for this.
Guys, we thank you for joining us on another episode of the Dorsey Rush podcast. I hope you can join us in a couple of weeks when I have another episode to come on. You can also, you know, find me on my website at dorseyrush.com. And also, if you would like, you can donate to this podcast and subscribe to this podcast as well to get updates and to get information on when the next podcast is going to come on. Hope you enjoyed it, and we'll talk to you soon. God bless. Bye-bye.
Thank you again for joining Dorsey Ross on this episode of The Dorsey Ross Show. Please like, share, and tell others about the show. Also, please check out the other podcast episodes. And if you would like, donate to this podcast and buy Dorsey a coffee. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll catch you in the next episode.